Hello and welcome to the Swell Files podcast. I am Levi Wolf.
And I am Abby Murphy, and together we host this podcast. We decided to make this podcast because we are passionate about the people who work at SoftwareOne.
Between Abby and I, we have 17 years of SoftwareOne experience across a number of different roles and locations, and we love getting the chance to dive deeper into the culture of the company.
This podcast is a behind-the-scenes look at some of our friends at SoftwareOne. We call them SWOMIs. The things they do at work, and even some of their hobbies and activities outside of work.
So whether you're a current employee, a prospective new SWOMI, a SoftwareOne alumni, a customer, a partner, or just a friend of the show,
we hope you enjoy this deep dive into the people of SoftwareOne and the things that make them great.
Enjoy the show. Well, welcome everyone to another episode of the podcast. We had a teaser for this episode in our last interview with Jackie, and she mentioned Renee. So Renee, we're excited to have you. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited. This is the best way to end the work week. So I'm excited that we get to chat together today.
Yeah, it's always fun. We try to do these on a Friday. It is a good way to end the week. So maybe before we dive into some questions to try to get to know you, let's just maybe start with what your role is at SoftwareOne right now.
Yeah. So my role right now is Global Sales Enablement Director for North America. And I just started in that role in April. Prior to that, I was in the role of Learning and Development Manager for NORAM. And I've been here at SoftwareOne for just a bit over 2 years total. I started in May 2021.
And you're based here in Milwaukee, so I've gotten to know you a little bit from seeing you in the office.
Yes.
But Abby's born and raised. Yeah, and maybe we can get into that with some of the questions. So Abby's not in Milwaukee. She's in New York, but I'll let her start with some of the questions.
Cool. Yeah, and I think we're going to start with some rapid-fire get-to-know-you questions, and then we'll go back to exploring your current role and your previous role and your time at SWO. So
love it.
Just to kick things off, like, what are some of your hobbies and interests? What are you into right now?
Yeah. So I think first and foremost, I have two kids who are ages 7 and 3. So a lot of time revolves around their hobbies and interests, which I do love and enjoy. So my son in particular, who's 7, loves to hike. And so we get a lot of opportunities to go out and hike around the area. We really like Seven Bridges, which is on kind of the south end of the city. And it's a beautiful spot to hike in Milwaukee. If Milwaukeeans are listening and have not been, I just highly recommend. It's absolutely gorgeous, especially in the fall. And so I love doing that. I do have a nice little garden going. So I find that to be pretty meditative, very rewarding. We got a ton of jalapenos going right now. My kale plant is absurd. And actually a ton of basil, which is very rewarding because I love pesto, which also ties into, I really enjoy cooking. I don't feel like I get to do as much of it as I probably used to do before kids, because now with kids, it's a little bit like fly by the seat of our pants sometimes. Admittedly, I probably feed my kids more SpaghettiOs than I care to admit. We have a case of those sent on Amazon Subscribe and Save every month. So that's an indicator of sometimes how life goes. But so really enjoy that. Really enjoy reading. I probably read at least 3 business books a week, partially because of my work. And partially because I just love it. I just enjoy learning. And then I also really enjoy working out. And so whether it's fun things like my husband and I right now just joined a pickleball league. So I've been getting into that, all about the craze. I used to do group fitness instruction and now just enjoy time with my personal trainer. And then I go to yoga classes regularly as well. So a little mix of some running, yoga, weightlifting, just good things to kind of keep me active and probably my favorite mode of stress relief. So yeah, that's some of the stuff I'm into.
Wow, there's
that's
so many
a lot of interesting things. Yeah.
I was like taking notes and I'm like, 3 books a week, !! That's incredible. And then pickleball and gardening. I want to I want to have a salad at your place sometime with your garden findings. That's awesome. And then you said Seven Bridges in Milwaukee. I live in the Two Bridges neighborhood in Manhattan. So my ears perked up and I was like, Seven Bridges. I've never been there before.
Like, give it a look. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that we have Taylor Swift listed on our questions. Is this a Levi question?
Yeah. Well, the context is we were walking through the office and my wife was there. She's a huge Taylor Swift fan. And Becca Ware, you know, she's been on the podcast, huge Taylor Swift fan. And we were talking about Taylor Swift with Renee. And so I just had to bring it up.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're a Swiftie, right?
I am a Swiftie. Although I'll say I was not as big of a fan of Taylor in her country music days. Like, country music is just not necessarily my personal preference. And, you know, I think at the time, it's really remarkable to see how her career has taken off. Because frankly, and I think most like long-term Swifties will tell you, there was a period of time where it was not cool to like Taylor Swift. And I feel like Taylor is in her prime, like cool girl era right now, where an era, no puns intended. But I think that a lot of us have come to appreciate her for the depth of musician that she is. And I don't know that all of us kind of fully saw in her younger years, where clearly she's very talented. She's managed her career in incredible ways. But especially 1989 is what turned me into a Swiftie, where I was like, this I can get behind. I really love this. Really enjoyed the music. As much as, like, I think Ryan Adams is no longer such a popular figure in the music world anymore, back before we knew how problematic he was. I really enjoyed when he did the covers of 1989. So I think it's easy to forget like how much that took off in her career. And yeah, I'm a big fan. Unfortunately, I have not been able to secure tickets to the Eras Tour. There's not unlimited funding for such ventures in the Audi household, much to my disappointment. But you never know. I've been entering every contest humanly possible, and maybe I'll snag some tickets to one of those six LA tour dates that are coming up. But yeah, so I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Love so it. If anyone from Software and Leadership is listening, we would really appreciate that as like a reward for something we were talking about. I think you were mentioning like a box in Chicago, Renee. And so that never materialized. Yes. But yeah, we want to put that out there.
I love that. Truly. I mean, I could turn into a seller overnight if some partner wanted to offer Eras Tour tickets. I think I could go hard getting some net new logos for us if that was the incentive.
Is Kiss Miller listening? Like, maybe this could be a central customer event. I'm sure there are customers out there who would like to catch the T-Swift show as well. So
yeah, we're going to forward this to all the sales leaders.
I'm confident Taylor Swift is the answer to any of our H2 problems.
Love it. Well, we'll ask one more rapid fire question. I love to ask this question. What were you like as a teenager? What were you, what were you like growing up? What genre of teen were you?
So, you know, I grew up in a pretty strict household. So there was a tight leash there. And so I think probably the thing that could most tell you what I was like as a teenager was that I wanted to actually become a Lutheran pastor, was my career goal. And I spent 3 weeks between my junior and senior year going to a seminary camp. And so that's how cool I was.
Wow.
And truly, I loved sort of my like church camp life as a kid. I was in a traveling youth choir with my church. And it was really foundational for me in terms of some of my closest friends. Some of the first guys that I dated growing up were all like church, you know, bros. And so that was definitely like the center of my social world. And I went to a really, a very cool church in the Milwaukee suburbs that had a really robust program for high schoolers. And I felt really fortunate for that because I got to meet a lot of people from around the area. And it was sort of my favorite outlet in terms of kind of social connection and getting to do some cool, meaningful things, but also just like fun social stuff that like teenagers do. So, you know, I don't know that I was overly I didn't really do anything bad as a teen, I guess this is the best way for me to put it.
Yeah.
But I was very ambitious. I was always involved with like all the things. So definitely kept myself very busy. I was big into band as well. And then also was in like cheerleading, and track and field was also big for me. I was a hurdler in track. And actually recently I was at the gym with my personal trainer and they had a hurdle out. I don't know why, but I looked at that and I was like, how did I ever leap over those things back when I was in high school? So if you ask me like hurdle something now, I don't think that would go successfully whatsoever. But it was a really cool event. And I'm glad that I had those experiences as a teen. So yeah, so teenage Renee was frankly probably not all that dissimilar to me today in the way of I've always been really focused on how can I continue to become better than I was the day before? How do I learn new things? How do I connect with other people? I think that's just always been at the foundation of who I've been.
Well, I know Abby, and I know she has like a million follow-up questions because there's a lot of stuff to dive into there, but we'll probably have to save those for being in person together next week.
Like, I was like, I could ask a gazillion questions about this, but I'm like, I'll wait for Levi to be like, hold, like, yeah. Calm down, Abby.
Yeah, I know. We're hearing like lots of interesting nuggets, so hopefully our listeners will feel the same way. But I guess we'll save anything else interesting for, you know, come up and talk to Renee in person next time you see her.
The last time I had a delightful conversation with Renee was at Mid-Year in Cincinnati. And so Mid-Year in Indy next week, we got to repeat it.
Full circle year later. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I guess you've been here for a couple of years, Renee. Like, let's start with what brought you to Software One? Like, how did you find the role here?
Yeah. So a few years prior to coming to Software One, I had been working in higher education for 15 years. And I was in this role in higher education crisis management in residence life and housing. And my primary responsibilities were staffing and training. So I worked with about 500 employees in this department to help them to be able to meet the needs of Marquette students, frankly, in some of the worst moments of their lives and to be prepared for those moments. So everything from, you know, suicide ideation to a missing student on campus to issues of anxiety and depression, you know, really lighthearted stuff. And so what I learned was really the ways that I could utilize data in terms of the ways that we would track student concerns to be able to better prepare our staff for the times when we could anticipate that these issues might be on the rise. And that's when I really fell in love with learning and development and training design, because I went, wow, if I could unlock, number one, being able to get people the right training at the right time that's going to help them to feel really confident and secure in how to respond, that's a huge gift to give them and to give the person who they're responding to, in effect, our customers. And then two, if I could also design that training to feel really meaningful and can connect and it isn't boring and is something that actually can profoundly stick with that person, that seems like the secret sauce. And that's what I really began to do at Marquette, was going, can I take their entire training program down to the studs, build it back up into one that's really designed with the employee in mind for what they need in the moment that they need it. And I loved doing that work, but the issue was I was doing that in addition to being on call for a week at a time each month, to supervising 6 full-time staff and managing everything in the employee life cycle from the talent acquisition on through the employee exit in whatever form that would take and everything that happened in between. So that was a lot. And in the beginning of my career, that was really exciting. And as I began going along, the more I began to feel like, oh, what if I could just do this one thing I love of learning and development? And actually, the seed for Software One got planted in 2016 when I met with Courtney Werner Reynolds, who used to work for Software One. And she had reached out to me because I had just had my son and we were getting together for coffee over my maternity leave. And she was telling me all about her fantastic job at Software One, how she had just helped with everything that was happening in Mexico City with the GSDC and helping them to feel connected to the company culture. And I remember asking her then, I was like, if you ever have a position open up on your team, I would be very interested in that. Like, everything she was talking about was like, wow, that's exactly what I want to be doing and the type of people who I want to do this work with. And then Courtney reached out to me in January of 2021 and she sent me kind of a cryptic email to my work email address and was like, call me. And I was like, is this spam? Like, what the hell is this? And so I text her, I was like, hey, did you email me? She's like, yeah, give me a call. And she was asking if she could refer me to the role because she was moving on and she thought I would really love it. And sure enough, and I remember in the interview process thinking like, these are exactly the types of people who I want to work with and type of company I want to do this work with. And so that's really how I landed with Software One, and I'm incredibly grateful for Courtney for really queuing up the opportunity for me and thinking of me when, you know, she was moving on to some new challenges and new opportunities. And I've been loving what I've been able to do so far with SWO.
Yeah. And so now you've been at SWO for, you know, around 2 years, you said, right? Just over two. Yeah. And you started in a role and then you recently moved into a new role. Can you tell us a little bit about that previous role and the transition into your current role and what that's all about?
Yeah. So I started out as part of the learning and development team. And as some people know, not long after I joined, the rest of the L&D team departed and onto, you know, exciting things for them, either personally or professionally, which was great. But I remember having a moment where I was looking around and going, should I be worried that these other people left me? And then Patty and Ashley were kind enough to reach out and we sat down and got dinner together, and they were really assuring me that like, all is well, we see a great place for you here, keep going with us, like we're gonna, you know, we're gonna make this work. And actually it wound up being for the best, because I think, as probably you both know and anyone listening who's in Software One knows, there's been a lot that has been changing within the company as we grow. And I think understandably so, I think we're learning a lot along the way and each day as we do it. And so being able to kind of grow the L&D capacity in terms of where it needed to go for this sort of next season of what Software One is heading into and what it's all about and what our employees need was really exciting. But what I quickly found in working in L&D, the first team that I was aligned to is Chris Brown's team in the West. And that was kind of the first goal that was set forth for me, was to, you know, go forth and get them on board with L&D in the West. And I think I felt really fortunate that Chris and I really hit it off. I learned a lot from him and Rory in my early months about really just listening to seller needs, hearing out where there's challenges in the business, and being able to quickly go, okay, wait a second, there's this problem. What steps can I take to help to alleviate it and help to be able to help teams to manage that? And so that was really exciting in terms of some of those, I think, initial wins in terms of really understanding the sales function and being able to relate well to our sales leaders in terms of some of the challenges and needs that they had. And that quickly expanded into, you know, working with Sean Kitzmiller and working with Shane and really expanding into the rest of the sales leadership team. And in turn, Billy Templeton about a year ago had invited me to come out with the global sales enablement team when they were doing some FinOps training in Amsterdam and to help assist with some coaching on the design of their delivery and the overall methods that they were using to facilitate. And that was really sort of a warm-up of getting to know more of the global sales enablement team, seeing what they were working on and seeing what they were doing. And I found that I really loved that sales enablement side of things. I like being able to see this more direct line between going, okay, if we pull these levers and we help people to learn these things, what do we see as the business impact as a result of that? And frankly, I really love our sales teams. I love our sellers. I think they're amazing people who genuinely put forth so much work to do well for our customers and to be able to show up and really excel day in and day out. So anything I can do to help to support that, to me was really exciting. And to get to do more of that within the sales function was a big reason why I shifted roles on over to the sales enablement team. So that's what kind of brought me over. And I think Billy and Patrick Schmidt really saw this opportunity where I had this strong depth of skill in helping people to grow their quote unquote soft skills, which is sort of a term I hate because there's really nothing soft about soft skills, right? About communicate effectively and being able to deliver a message and persuade people and inspire them. And those are actually very difficult skills to learn. And so I like to refer to them more as behavioral skills. And for me to be able to wed both the tactical of go to market and the strategy, how we show up in front of customers, and really connect those with those very necessary behavioral skills that we need to have and that frankly are going to become increasingly important in light of what's happening with AI, what's happening in terms of the speed and the velocity really of change that we're encountering in the business. What I'm sad to tell folks is that that isn't going away anytime soon, right? So any of us who are feeling sort of whiplash of change coming out of the pandemic, what everything is pointing to in terms of the research from the big consulting firms of the, you know, McKinsey's of the world is that change is going to become really the normal of what we all encounter in our work. And actually the best suited work for humans is going to be our ability to navigate multiple contexts very quickly and seamlessly to be able to meet business goals in especially ways that AI is not going to be able to replace or replicate, which frankly is our ability to read the context of what's in front of us and to be able to pivot and adjust quickly. And so I think something really fascinating that I'm seeing is that as some companies are adopting AI into their sales practices, what they're finding is sometimes that AI is very inaccurate to what the customer needs are. So you have to really proceed with caution in being able to utilize those tools to perhaps expedite the things that may have previously taken us a long time to do, or may have been a very manual process, or may have taken an incredible amount of research to be able to collect that information and really apply that then to sellers who have extraordinary capabilities in understanding the market, understanding their clients, and being able to communicate that in effective ways. So I kind of went a little bit off base here from the original question, but I think that's the exciting stuff about where we're going and the need that sales enablement can't continue to be a function that is simply, let's provide you with the playbooks, let's help you to be able to go to market, let's help you to execute on the portfolio. It has to include our ability to communicate those needs effectively, to read the room, to read the client, and to make those adjustments on the fly.
Hey, anytime we can work AI into an answer, that's timely, so that's great. And you did compliment sales. Abby and I are both in sales.
I know. It's like making us blush over here.
Making me smile. I guess I wanted to ask, you know, you talked about the two different roles. One was called, you know, L&D, and the other one is global sales enablement.
Yeah.
And it sounded like they're more or less doing similar things, but just for a different team. Is that kind of how you would describe it too? It's just more of a focus on sales, or is there a big distinction between the two?
Yeah, I view them as very complementary. Because frankly, I think good sales enablement is good learning and development design. And actually good learning and development should be enabling the sales function and how we sell and how we are client facing. And so I think the distinction in SWO is certainly that L&D has this focus overall on our broader teams. I know, especially with where global L&D is going, is really examining, do we have the right tools in place for every SWOMI to access the types of learning and development materials they need to be able to perform their jobs well? And I'm sure Jackie had talked about this previously, but I think the great work that she's been doing in how you own your career and own your career path, to me, those make sense that they're really living within that L&D function. But in essence, there needs to be a good relationship where we have a really clear baton pass between L&D and sales enablement. So that way we're complementing each other. And that was something I really began to build out with Billy and Eric and Noram when I first got started, was going, hold on a second. For me to do effective learning and development, I need to understand the sales strategy. Because I'm trying to drive these initiatives. It may sound really good on paper, but they actually don't mean anything to the business results. I'm wasting everyone's time. And I'm frankly wasting money of the business. And so they were very open to that. And I think that we've had a really good relationship between L&D and GSE to be able to identify, okay, where does GSE have this specialty and this lens and this relationship with sellers? Where can we infuse these L&D concepts so that they really are hand in hand? So that way, when you attend, you know, Jackie's workshop on owning your career in the learning and development space, you're not hearing things that feel like, oh, this is completely out of left field to what my sales leader is talking about and trying to help me to drive and what they're trying to do with me one-on-one. And I don't think we're quite there yet, but I think we have everything in place to help us to be able to get there over time.
That's great. What would you say your favorite part of your job is right now? Role you're in?
Yeah. It's facilitating. I love anytime I get to be in front of teams or with a group and just helping people to feel really connected to what they're learning. And most important is, like, when I finish a session and someone comes up to me and they're like, oh my gosh, this was so useful. I can't wait to use this in my job. Like, there's no better feeling to me than that. of, okay, I delivered it the right way at the right time, and it's going to help them with their jobs. And so to me, when I know I've hit that mark, that's what feels really good. And I'm kind of in the midst of that prep right now for mid-year, actually, of like, I'm deep into decks. I know that marketing wants my decks from me, and I can't stop tinkering with them. And just trying to help them be, you know, ready and at their very best once I, you know, show up next week, because I care a lot about that moment of being able to give people, frankly, like I value people's time a lot. And time is the one thing you can't get back, right? As cheesy as it is. Mm-hmm. And, but it's a reality. So when I'm at mid-year and I think about on the business side of it, I'm looking in this room and there's, you know, 300 or so people who are sitting there. And I think about the business cost of having those people in that room. And I think about, frankly, like the mental cost of what it's taking them to be there, right? We're all giving up things to travel for work, to be able to be there, right? Even if the outcome of it is really good when we're there, there's been an opportunity cost for everyone to be in that room. And if I'm not delivering something of value, I do feel like I've failed at my job and at my role. And so I take that part really seriously. And it's the best part when I feel like I'm in it, I'm landing it, I can see that it's happening, like the engagement is there. And then I know like I've done right by Software One, and I've done right by the people in the room.
Yeah, that's really great. One thing that I'm thinking of now, you know, you mentioned that how much you read, and you read a lot of like business books. Do you have any, and you just talked about how you work with sellers. Do you have any recommendations of a book or two that you're like, if every seller reads this, it's going to make them, you know, this much better? Or, like, do you have anything that comes to mind when I ask that question? I'm putting you on the spot a little bit.
No. Because actually, yeah, there's a few. And actually, I just picked up a bunch of books for our sales leaders that I'll see next week. But I think in terms of individual sellers, the number one book I'd recommend, I know that Shane is going to speak a bit to this book as well during mid-year, is Unreasonable Hospitality by Will Guidara. And those who are not familiar, Will comes through the, as the book kind of suggests, the hospitality world and restaurants. And Will is really known from his work front of house in the dining room at 11 Madison Park, which is world-renowned New York restaurant, I think, Abby, as you probably well know.
Three Michelin stars.
Yeah. And really, I am fascinated by this restaurant. Shane kind of sent me down this path. And now I've been like deep in this like rabbit hole of wanting to know everything about Will Guidara, how he does what he does, how 11 Madison Park has accomplished what it has. And I have this like fascination with excellence of wanting to figure out, you know, how can I learn some pieces from what this person has done, even in a very different and distinct industry? And how do we apply that into Software One's context? And I think I'm still putting those pieces together, but I don't know how anyone can read that book and not walk away from it and go, I have a profound opportunity to approach my corner of the world differently and have a greater impact on that. I think it has a lot of lessons for leaders as well. But that one, I think in particular, I highly recommend the book.
It's funny, I was in the car with Shane yesterday going to a customer meeting, and he brought that book up as well. So that's twice in 1 week that I'm like, I got to get that book.
Sounds like we need to read it, Abby. Maybe a challenge. And who can read it first?
Exactly. And Renee, I also, I don't know if you watched The Bear.
Yes, I just got into that. I just finished season one, and so I'm embarking on season two now. I was way behind the game on that one, and I should have jumped
there. There's an episode that ties in so perfectly to that book, and it's very much – they're like, apparently Shane said they're like reading that book in the background in one of the scenes. So you might want to try and catch up before mid-year so you can reference it. It'll be pretty popular.
How many episodes can I watch the next three nights?
Yeah. So we've talked about, and this happens a lot on the podcast, right? We bring up a lot of other people, Shane and Sean and Chris. And so I, if possible, I want to try to make the distinction between the people at Software One and the culture, if that is even possible. So what would you say is like unique about the people at Software One?
Yeah, to me, it's our core value of humble that I really see in action day in and day out from people. And the way that I see it is, to me, it really strikes me that people, they want to continue to learn more. They want to become better at what they do. They genuinely desire to do well by their coworkers and by our clients. And it really is unique, and especially coming out of the higher education world where, frankly, that's an interesting environment because, you know, people are not surprised by this, that people who work in education are typically, you're talking about outside of kind of higher level administrators or athletics, you're not exactly paid great money to do what you do. And what I found was that because people commonly were not rewarded or incentivized at all, what becomes the currency by which people find meaning and they find value is in who they know and what they know. And what happens then in those conditions is that people become really protective about those things. Because if your currency is who you let in and how you let them know sort of your secrets and what you're doing, it becomes really difficult to break those barriers down and to help people to share and to help people to collaborate. And when I've shared that with folks outside of higher ed, I think they've typically been really surprised by that because it just isn't the perception you may typically have of educators. And I'll say, like, I love Marquette to the day I die. Like, I bleed blue and gold. I love that place so much. And yet, if I were to describe that to anyone at Marquette, they would wholeheartedly agree with that. And it's by virtue of how it's set up and established, right? Versus in a business environment, what I found transitioning over is because we know our goal is revenue, right? It sort of takes that conversation off the table in a weird way of, okay, we're all driven to that goal. We all know that we have quotas or KPIs or other expectations in front of us that we need to attain to be able to be successful in our roles. That means then if I want to be successful in this environment, I have to look around me for who else is going to support me in doing that. And I really think Software One does that uniquely, where I've encountered other employees who have come in from other business environments, and I won't call any other businesses out right now, but I'm sure you can venture to guess what some of them might be or look like. And what they've expressed are things like, you know, during onboarding, when I needed help with something and I ping someone, they just help me to find it and they help me to figure it out, or they'll get on a call with me to help me work through it together, versus at this previous place I worked, they were like, well, you have to figure it out yourself. And because that was the environment that they sort of grew up in, so to speak. And I think that we're really fortunate in Software One that the environment that we've all sort of grown up in, I think the entire attitude of it that had been laid from the beginning is we get things over the line together. We figure these things out together. And if you can help someone else out to be able to do that, why wouldn't you help them out? Because someone else has probably done that for you. And so I think we're really fortunate to have a culture that's been built that way, because that's the stuff. There's no amount of money that you can buy. There's no amount of consultants that you can bring in that will help you to create that. That's profoundly in the fabric of how we operate. And so to me, I think that's how I describe the culture, and I think what makes us distinct.
That's interesting. That I like the thought of it is that it kind of, you almost pay it forward by, like, when new people are helped initially, then they're like, that's their default for the rest of their software and career. So it's interesting that I like that that perspective of it. And it's kind of a good incentive for those of us who have been around for a while to be helping people and to make mm-hmm. sure that we do go the extra mile, because we know down the road that it's going to pay off.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was such a great answer. And I'm thinking, are there any other questions that you have, Levi?
I just wanted to ask about here? I wanted to ask about the Milwaukee office.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been fun getting everyone's answers. You know, for anyone listening, we've been in the new headquarters more or less for all of 2023. So maybe, you know, half a year or so. But yeah, what do you like about the new office? Any hidden gems, Renee? Any things that a visitor would have to look for? I don't think Abby's ever been there. So what does she have to look for?
Give me a list. I need to get there.
There's a lot that I love about the new office. I think the space is just so dreamy and it's really enjoyable to be in. And I really appreciate all the thoughtfulness that the team put into making it not only a profoundly functional space, but I think also one that just, it feels really good when you're there, right? It's all the light coming in. It's that combination of like exposed brick. And I think, I don't know if this has already been covered on the podcast, but I love the history of the building as being an old dye house. The area of the Third Ward was historically, you know, back in the day, you kind of see you're like right on the river, there's these train tracks coming through, and it was a hub of that type of trading manufacturing activity, you know, at one point in time for Milwaukee. And long-term Milwaukeeans will tell you there was a point in time where people did not generally set foot into the Third Ward. There was nothing there. There were not restaurants there. There was not what it is today. It was really for a good amount of time was very abandoned and needed a lot of love. And it's really been over the course of the past like 15 to 20 years that it has grown substantially. It's gotten these huge investments to make it what it is. And now it's like, you can't imagine it being any other way. And so I think that what's really special about that location is everything else that surrounds it that is so incredibly cool, from great restaurants to some great rooftop bars, if that's your thing, or even you just want to enjoy, you know, a soda there. It's great, great view of the city. When I think about hidden gems, I always feel like that's a tricky question, because it's like what becomes known to you, you almost begin to assume is like known to everyone. But I think that something that I really appreciate that's actually kitty corner from the office, there's a great running store right over there. And they do a great job at being able to sit down and really look at your foot strike, helping you to find the right shoe for you. They have great running groups out of there. So I feel like that's kind of a hidden gem that would be good for people to know about if they're looking for like a nice free running group. And then actually back to the pickleball in the beginning, there's great pickleball courts underneath the bridge across from the public market. And so actually I'm looking to get started like a once a week, anyone who wants to go play.
Yes, I want that. Let's do it.
Hey, you heard it here first.
It's coming to the Milwaukee office. I know initially the idea came to me at like the end of Q2 and I was like, not the time to bring this up. So I'm like, keep everyone focused. I don't want it to be my fault that I got everyone involved with pickleball and that's why we didn't close deals. So
you know, Joel on the multi-vendor team is like, I think he like lives where pickleball was invented, and he is actually like trained as like an official or something like that. So yeah, you'll have to connect with Joel to be like, hey, let's talk pickleball in the first soccer one pickleball tournament.
Yes, I love that. I love that. That is good to know. So I think there's just all these kind of little elements like that around the Third Ward that if you take some time, you know, spend a little time after work hanging around in the area, talk to the business owners, I think it really reflects the Milwaukee culture, which is always one that I found to be very warm and welcoming. And I think especially the small business owners in the area, they really want to connect with people and just help people to find a great experience, just like what we want to do with our customers every day, right? And so I think that spending that time in the Third Ward and getting to know some of those local businesses is always a good way to go about it. And I know as well, Collectivo is certainly a fan favorite for coffee, but I also think Valentine is top notch.
Is there a Valentine down there now?
Yeah, right by our parking structure.
Wow, and you're close to the Stone Creek as well. You guys have like the trifecta of
and
amazing
and
Milwaukee
in the public
coffee.
Market.
Stop
so
it.
Add a fourth in there, yeah.
And also is Wonderkin or...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wonderkin, is that what it's called now? It used to be called Kickapoo.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Well, there's so much good coffee. But the other part, I know there's a lot of like gluten-free Swomies out there. There is a local bakery called Bunny's Bite, and they carry, especially their chocolate chip cookies are the most divine I've ever tasted in my life. Yes, they are $4, but it's the best $4 you'll ever spend in your life. And anyone who's gluten-free understands like that is just the nature of the game. They're like, yes, for a normal person, this is a like $1.50 cookie. And for a gluten-free person, it's, you know, $17.
A bang for your buck at $4, right?
right. But it is so good. So that's like my favorite find to pick up there. That is really good.
This is like a 3-minute section that we have to just send to all all visitors to Milwaukee and say, you have to listen to this, you know, before you come to the office, just in case. We've covered a lot of topics. So that's great. I love it.
And I love the history lesson too, because I, you know, I always forget that people always talk about how the Third Ward was what it was before what it is today. Yeah. And I forgot until you brought that up. So that's really a good reminder of the area and kind of the Milwaukee roots.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. I'm glad it was helpful and didn't feel like redundant. Like, Renee, that's all we hear about is all we hear about Milwaukee history. We're done. Enough.
No, I love Milwaukee history. I'm still trying to find someone who will watch. There's like a 7-hour history of Milwaukee, John Goethe documentary. And I've yet, when I was living there, I couldn't find anyone who would actually watch it with me. Oh. And you have to like buy the DVDs. Like, it's not available to stream. So I have to like find a DVD player as well. But maybe Renee, you're my documentary friend now.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I would absolutely watch. I know what you're talking about. And I think as well, my hang up was needing to acquire the DVDs.
Yeah. And someone's like, I think you can get them from the library. And then I eventually moved to New York and I ran out of time for renting them from the library. I don't think they have them here. They might. Who knows?
Yeah, New York Public Library is pretty remarkable in terms of their ability to secure all kinds of great resources. So.
Yeah. So maybe I'll give that a try.
There you go. I love it.
Awesome. Well, this has been such a treat. Levi, any other questions?
No, good from my end.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much, Renee. Yeah, I'm excited to see you in person next week. And
I know, I can't wait. It'll be so good.
Cool.
That's been another episode of The Swell Files. Music, editing, and mixing by Brandon Avenger.
And we love to hear from you, so send us your feedback and future guest recommendations. We're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, so be sure to subscribe to never miss an episode.